I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday afternoon. Skin cancer, the world's most common cancer, is truly an epidemic. There are more new cases annually than the combined incidence of cancers of the breast, prostate, lung, and colon. They have a high rate of recurrence, and it's amazing how many people are likely to get some form of skin cancer during the course of a life. Studies in the Archives of Dermatology show that more than 2 million people in this country are developing over 3.5 million non-melanoma skin cancers every year, which is, get this, a 300% increase in the skin cancer incidence since 1994, when the rates were last estimated. So we thought, it's summertime, the sun is out, people are going to tanning beds. I'm not sure why people are still out in the sun, because we still think that being tan, and I know what it's like, is a great thing to be. You look healthy, you look good. So it raises all kinds of questions about what we need to do to protect ourselves from basal cell and squamous cell, and also from melanoma. And we have two guests with us to do just that this hour of the program. Dr. Amy Harker-Murray is a hematologist and oncologist at Frederick Hospital here in Milwaukee, also an assistant professor at the Medical College. She specializes in breast cancer, melanoma, non-melanoma skin cancer, and benign hematology. Dr. Harker-Murray, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Mrs. Dunn.
Yeah, happy to have you here. Also, and you can call me Kathleen. It's fine. Also joining us in our studios is Dr. Stefan Schicka, dermatologist at Frater and the Medical College of Wisconsin, assistant professor there. He's involved in many dermatology research projects and was recently awarded an American Cancer Society pilot research grant. Dr. Schicka, thank you so much for being with
pleasure.
Us as
thank
well.
You.
And we'll be welcoming phone calls. I would imagine we'll have a lot because of the prevalence of skin cancer and questions that you may have. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter @KDunnShow. These rates are just astounding. And what caught my attention was some front page story about a month and a half ago that showed that skin cancer rates are just at an astronomically high level right now. What's going on? Why do they keep increasing? Other kinds of rates of cancer seem to be going down.
Yeah, this is a very good question. I think we have to keep in mind that the skin cancers we see nowadays are really caused by sun exposure over the last 10, 20 years or even more. And when we really want to understand the increase in the skin cancer rate today, we have to really look back several years and look at sun exposure behavior, tanning behavior, how we spent or how people spent their free time in order to really find an explanation. And it is true, most of the skin cancers we are talking about, the basal and squamous cell cancer and the melanoma, they are all sun related.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to change this idea, isn't it? Because it's so ingrained that you look a lot better if you've got a tan.
Well, and I'll say based on my experience with a number of my patients who are being diagnosed with melanoma in particular in their 60s and 70s, you'll ask them about whether or not they used SPF for sunscreen. And they say that they did now, but back when they were younger in their 20s and 30s, they were putting baby oil on to lie out in the sun.
Yes, I remember those days.
And I remember growing up, it was if you went away on summer vacation, you didn't come home with a tan, you didn't have a good vacation. And so I think some of the ideas have really changed.
Mm-hmm.
And as Dr. Schicka said, is that what we're seeing now are the effects of the UV radiation from a couple to a few decades ago.
Mm-hmm. Have there been any studies being done that show that the sun is more intense right now than it used to be or not?
Yeah, that's a very difficult question. I think most of those studies come from Australia, where the melanoma incidence is really skyrocketing,
right,
unfortunately, right now. And I think there people have seen an increase of basically the ultraviolet light hitting the Earth's surface over the last few years, which may or likely has something to do with the thinning of the ozone layer as well.
Mm-hmm. So give us an understanding again of what the three types of skin cancer are, which are more serious, where we're seeing the greatest increase.
So The three types, we basically divide skin cancer into two big categories, the melanoma, which we can talk about in 2 minutes, and then the non-melanoma skin cancer. And non-melanoma skin cancer, we basically put into that category the squamous cell skin cancer and the basal cell skin cancer. Both of those skin cancers, basal cell and squamous cell, are really, we know with relative certainty at this point that they are directly sun-related. And there were very nice studies which could show that a certain number of hours spent in the sun, for example, like 30,000, 40,000 hours accumulated during lifetime, just increases the risk for either basal cell or squamous cell. So we think that basal cell and squamous cell are directly related to the chronic sun exposure, and we see them in farmers, for example, a lot. And the other big group of skin cancer, which we see less often, but it can be deadly, unfortunately, is the melanoma. And for the melanoma, now we also know it is sun-related, it is caused by the sun. Probably not so much by chronic long-term exposure to the sunlight, but much more to the intermittent, very acute, very intense sun exposures, which then also would lead to sunburns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And are we seeing an increase in those melanoma rates as well?
We are. Those have been increasing over the years as well. And there's been a lot of attention recently to the increasing rates of melanoma in young individuals, in particular young women and young men, between the ages of teenagers and into the early
20s. Really? That early? Oh, my goodness.
As much as a 2 to 3 to 4-fold increase over prior years. And in part, we were worried about how much that is related to tanning bed use. And if we see those rates continue to increase in young people, even though it's the most melanoma is more commonly diagnosed in older folks. If we see that increased rate incidence in young people continue over the next 50 years, it really makes us concerned about what the incidence rates of melanoma are going to be in people in their 50s and 60s. Yeah. It's going to be quite a drastic increase.
Well, why do we have tanning beds?
Well,
I mean, they're obviously dangerous, right? Shouldn't there be some kind of a sign or something say you enter this at risk of your own health?
Well, now the FDA stepped in and they regulated the tanning bed lamps, the production, the sort of the wavelengths emitted by those lights. There is a ban for tanning beds in minors in many states now. But if we step back in history, that explains why people really thought tanning beds were a safe way to tan. For the ultraviolet light, we basically distinguish here on the Earth two types, the UVA and the UVB. Light, ultraviolet A, ultraviolet B. A lot of the initial research on skin aging and skin cancer was only done for ultraviolet B. During that time, the tanning bed industry stepped in and designed their lamps in a way that they primarily emitted, basically gave off ultraviolet A. Because of the lack of research at that point, at time, they claimed, well, we have the safe part of the sunlight. But nowadays we know there is just no safe ultraviolet light. UVA and UVB equally contribute to skin cancer and also skin aging. Hmm. And the other reason why tanning beds were used a lot, especially before you went to vacation into more very sunny places, because the idea was that there is something like a protective tan.
Right.
That's also proved to be a false belief. We know now there is just no such thing as a protective tan or safe tan.
Mm-hmm. And I just saw an article in the New York Times published last week where the FDA is stepping in and has put a black box warning on tanning beds, and all tanning salons are going to have a black box warning, just like some of the medications, indicating how dangerous they are. The question is where is that going to be posted? What's the size of the print? I'm sure we'll get further details on that.
Well, I'm astounded when you talked about the number of very young people who are getting melanoma. Does research show that that's directly related to tanning beds, or it's being out in this? What is it?
Well, it's always hard to find a direct proof of principle, because it's not as though you would take 100 young women or men and randomize them to you use tanning beds and you don't use tanning beds, and we're going to prove the association that way. But what they've done is they've done interviews of young people and found out how often they use tanning beds, what was their youngest age at tanning bed use, how frequently do they use them, and then see what the rates of melanoma are, and have clearly found a correlation that there's an increased risk of developing a melanoma if you've ever used a tanning bed. That rate goes up higher if you've used it more than 10 times in the past year. Mm. And that rate goes up even higher if you used it in your youth, in your teenage years. Mm. And so that's probably part of the reason why a lot of states, including Wisconsin, have banned tanning bed use for minors. Mm. I believe it's 18 years old in this state.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So what are we actually looking at? If we look at a body that's tan, it used to be, wow, you look great. You've been outside, you look relaxed and rested, et cetera. What are we really looking at? Are we looking at terribly damaged skin? Is that what a tan is?
What a tan is it's very simple. It is the UV light stimulates the pigment cells in the skin, the so-called melanocytes, which could give rise to melanoma. The UV light stimulates these pigment cells to produce more pigment, which then darkens the skin. And that's what we used to like as a tan. But at the same time, what's happening, and this is really just a sort of body self-defense protection mechanism against the sunlight, the tanning. What the sunlight does at the same time, it interacts with the DNA, it interacts with a lot of proteins and other cellular components, alters them in a way so that it really, down the line, causes accelerated aging. We call that photoaging mm-hmm. because it has something to do with the light. And some of those mutations down the line may then also be the basis for skin cancer, mm-hmm. melanoma or non-melanoma skin cancer.
Well, what about, you also hear this advice that the body needs vitamin D and everybody should go out in the sun at least 20 minutes a day, summer, spring, winter, and fall, to take in sunlight for your body to be healthy.
So you're right, that's conflicting advice. We can get some of our vitamin D from our diet, you can get some vitamin D from supplementation, and then you do get some vitamin D from the sun. So, and we have two components within medicine that are kind of conflicting with each other. I think that what you need to keep in mind is that we shouldn't all become moles and stay underground and never go out in the sun. You have to be smart about it. Mm-hmm. So that means that you can go out, try to avoid the high-risk time, so between 10 a.m. and 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So try to go out more in the morning or in the early afternoon or evening. You can get your sun exposure, your vitamin D, for vitamin D creation that way. You can still go out and be out in the sun, but you have to be smart. You have to wear a wide-brimmed hat that covers the top of your ears and not just a baseball hat, because we can get melanomas up on our scalp. I've had patients who have hairdressers who have picked up a skin lesion on their scalp. Wear an SPF sunscreen when you're outside to help be protective, and then also consider purchasing SPF clothing. So there's shirts in particular that you can wear at the beach or when you're outside gardening that are thicker in quality than our normal t-shirts and can help protect you from the sun. So we still go out. You just have to be smart about what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and from a dermatological perspective, we do not encourage to increase your vitamin D level by going out into the sun more, because then that causes the photoaging and skin cancer. But there are really good supplements of vitamin D which people can take who may have lower or decreased levels. And we also, I think the final verdict is still out there. What is the correct level of vitamin D? How low can it go to before it becomes dangerous or detrimental to somebody's health? But I think bottom line is you do not need dangerous sun exposure in order to have sufficient vitamin mm-hmm. D levels. Mm-hmm. And in case somebody is low on vitamin D, we as a dermatology community clearly support and encourage to supplement it by taking it through, basically vitamin D supplements.
Mm-hmm. I think the other thing we need to keep in mind is the amount of sun exposure that is dangerous is different for every individual based on their family history, but also more specifically on their skin type mm-hmm. and their natural pigmentation. People who are born with more natural pigment are better protected from the sun and better protected from sunburns. People who are born with less natural pigment, more pale skin, blonde hair, red hair, light-colored eyes are at higher risk. People who have a tendency to burn easily when they go outside in the sun or develop freckles are also potentially at higher risk. Mm-hmm. So those are things to keep in mind find as well is that the risk varies vastly depending on what your natural pigmentation is.
Mm-hmm. And before we go to phone calls, and we're going to do this in a moment, so let me give you our number and you can get your place in line. 800-486-8655 is the number. When it comes to melanoma, it seems to me as though it wasn't that long ago that a lot of people died from melanoma. I remember Ronald Reagan's daughter, Maureen Reagan, died from melanoma, and others have died from this. I have read that recently there have been some drugs developed that have been just remarkable in fighting this kind of cancer. Is that true?
That is true. I think what we need to keep in mind is even though we're concerned that that melanoma is the more worrisome form of skin cancer rather than the non-melanoma skin cancers, the majority of melanomas are diagnosed in a very thin, early, highly curable stage.
Really?
85% or more of melanomas are diagnosed when they're confined to just the skin.
Hmm.
And the thinner they are, the better their prognosis is. So as a medical oncologist, I actually see a small minority of all patients diagnosed with melanoma.
Mm-hmm.
The new drugs that have been approved, there were four drugs approved within the past couple of years, whereas before in the prior 40 years, we have two drugs approved for the treatment of metastatic melanoma or melanoma that has spread to other organs. And yes, these new drugs are great advances, and yes, they can improve response rates and overall survival, but we really are just seeing a flicker of a hope of a long-term disease control. And so you would rather prefer to not get a melanoma and to be follow prevention
right.
strategies and what I call wise sun hygiene than have to use one of these new drugs. But you're right. There are some great advances that are out there and more coming down the pike, but
yeah.
they're still not the cure yet.
And we'll talk about treatment for non-melanoma
mm-hmm.
as we carry on, but we have a ton of people who would like to talk to you, so we will go to phone calls momentarily. Our phone number again is 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter @KDunnShow. We have two doctors with us from Fraidert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Stefan Schicka is a dermatologist and involved in many research projects, recently awarded an American Cancer Society pilot research grant. Dr. Amy Harker-Murray is a hematologist-oncologist, also at Fraidert and the Medical College of Wisconsin, specializing in breast cancer and melanoma, non-melanoma skin cancer, and benign hematology. Also, she's involved with dermatology research. Phone calls from you in just one moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls. Joel in Stevens Point is our first caller. Hi, Joel.
Hi, good afternoon.
I have a
17-year-old daughter. She has her own job. She makes her own money, and I'm not always at home all hours of the day to monitor what she does, but she goes to these tanning booths quite a bit. And I tell her my wife and I both tell her we don't like that she goes. It's not good for you and whatnot. And did I just hear you say, your guest say a while back that these places are off limits and are illegal to minors? Is that true?
Well, I wouldn't say that they are necessarily off limits to minors, but in the state of Wisconsin, they have been banned for young adults who are 16 years or younger.
Mm.
And so your daughter at 17 would be able to go. It is Minnesota that has set the guideline at 18.
Mm.
Okay.
Maybe you need to work to change the legislation, Joel. I mean, you talk. Yeah, it's difficult. What do you do? Because obviously mm-hmm. kids start smoking, too, and they're drinking underage, and it's really hard because at that age, and I was the same way, for heaven's sake. Mm-hmm. Not that I drank or smoked too early, but I did get in the sun, and I probably would still think, oh, it looks cool. You know, who worries about this? I'm not going to die for a long, long time. I'm not going to get cancer. You just don't think about it.
No, exactly.
Right.
You don't, right? And your daughter isn't, right?
Yes.
Does she have a lot of moles? Is there any family history of skin cancer, which would all be increased risk factors and might help you to convince her not to do it anymore?
My older brother, he's early 60s. He's had the basal cell on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to tell her this is not good for you. You know, please don't do it, but I can't eat typical teenager, you know, once in a while they sneak away
yeah.
after school and you don't know what they're doing. And they come home and, yeah, I was tanning. It's like, you know, please don't do this. But most, you know, like a lot of teenagers, mom and dad don't know anything. And
yeah.
you know,
well,
you try your best.
Right.
And what some people recommend are artificial tanners. They are completely safe. There is everything from cream lotion to put on all the way to spray tans, complete body tans. Maybe
you could buy something. That for her. There's a present you could give her, Joel.
that's a good idea.
Why not?
I'm trying, so thank you very much.
Yeah,
I appreciate
it. Keep trying.
Thank you for your call.
Yeah, he is trying. Deborah in St. Croix Falls. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. I have to say, as an aside, Kathleen, I'm finally getting used to the fact that you're on in the afternoon.
Oh, it's taken you a while. I've been here a while now.
It's easier for me to listen in the morning, so I was just missing you for a long time.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're here now. I'm glad I'm here now.
Here's my question. I actually was at the dermatologist this morning. I had something on my ear that didn't go away when it was frozen, and so he chose not to cut it, and he gave me a chemotherapy ointment.
Mm-hmm.
But he picked up this little thing on my arm, just a little red spot, and he burned that off and said that was the beginnings of a cancer. And then he looked at me all over and told me what this was and what that was and what to look out for. But to confirm what your guests are saying, I'm 66. He asked me what my habits were when I was a kid. You know, did we go to the beach and did I use baby oil and all that kind of stuff? But my question is, and I forgot to ask this, he said the key to sunscreen is to use it every 2 hours. But is it still safe? I have to be on a tractor a lot, and I just wonder if I should just have long pants and long sleeves on all the time.
Yeah, excellent question. So when we think about sun protection, then we think of three tiers, basically. Avoiding the sun is complete safe, okay? You can't avoid the sun if you have to work outside, right? Then the next tier would be covering up. And there is UV protective clothing, which really blocks the UV light to 100%. And then we say, well, the areas of the body which can't be covered, that's where the sunscreen should go. And as a third tier of protection, and it's absolutely right that you should apply it about 15 to 20 minutes before you go outside and then reapply every 2 hours. If you sweat a lot, it may have to be reapplied every hour because the sweat is really just breaking up this protective film and it just may not be there anymore after 1 hour.
Hmm. Email has come in. What about chemicals that are in sunscreen? Some say they're harmful, especially when absorbed under the heat or the sun. Dr. Harker-Murray, do you know?
I'm not aware of any data on that.
Is there
data? The most recent data really suggests that the chemicals are safe. We know that maybe the most likely reaction somebody might get is an allergic reaction, so-called contact allergy. But that person would recognize it relatively soon by getting an itchy rash, basically. But there are no significant health concerns which could be upheld by recent studies.
Dr. Harker-Murray, our caller mentioned going and having her whole body checked. Is this something that should just be done on a routine basis by your primary care physician every year? Should everybody go to see a dermatologist once a year? I'm sending you people for your profession if I say that. If you say that, I don't want to be too self-serving about it for you. But I'm just wondering, if it's so prevalent, somebody needs to be checking out everybody pretty thoroughly to catch things, right?
So first of all, it sounds like Deborah had a very good dermatologist because she went in with a question about a specific lesion on her ear and they looked at the rest of her body. So she had what sounds like a very good dermatologist. So kudos for that. In terms of all over skin exams. So far, there are no recommendations on going ahead and having yearly skin exams done as part of the U.S. Preventive Task Force. But for patients who have a strong family history, have had multiple relatives, or especially first-degree relatives with skin cancers or melanoma, people who have a tendency to burn more easily than they tan, lighter skin types, those would be all the types of people who should be talking to their family practice doctor or their dermatologist, their primary care physician, about skin exams. And I don't know what advice you give patients on this issue, Stefan.
Yeah, I think from our perspective, a dermatologist's perspective, it does make sense to get annual or every other year full skin checks probably by a dermatologist more often as needed based on the individual risk profiles. And the Europeans have been much better about that than we here in the United States. And we could, there is clearly data from Germany showing that this increased surveillance really leads to an earlier recognition, which then translates also into better survival. And better treatment data really for skin cancers. Mm.
And really one of the other important things is just teaching people about how to examine their own skin. And so there's the A, B, C, D, E's of melanoma in particular that we teach patients. So asymmetry, making sure that half of the mole looks the exact same as the other half of the mole. Border, that the border is nice and smooth and round and doesn't have like little finger-like extensions. C is color, so that it's got a constant color throughout, no color variation. D for diameter, less than 6 millimeters in size or the end of a pencil eraser for people who remember what those look like. And then E is for any evolution or change within the mole. So people can also be proactive on their own at looking at their skin and if they see any of those A, B, C, D, E's, getting in to have it evaluated.
Mm. People don't remember pencil erasers anymore? Really, they don't. I didn't know that. I kind of liked pencil erasers. Let's go back to phone calls. Thank you, Deborah, for your call. John in Milwaukee. Hi.
Oh, hi. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Yeah, I think you answered my question about SPF-treated clothing. It sounds like it is effective. But I did hear, as far as chemicals go, I did hear that retinol A should be avoided in the sunscreens.
Retinol A?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, so usually the typical sunscreen doesn't have any vitamin A derivatives or retin A, retinol A. We use those actually for different conditions like acne. We also know that it can actually repair part of the photo damage, but it would really get destroyed by intense sun exposure. So I'm not aware of any sunscreen containing that. And you're right. Well, it maybe should not be avoided, but it probably wouldn't make a lot of sense to put it in.
Mm-hmm. Does that answer? All right, John. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Matthew, email from St. Croix County. He's 40 years old. He's worked outside for most of his life. What are his probabilities of getting skin cancer if he doesn't wear sunscreen, which it sounds like he didn't, and continues to work 12 hours a day outside?
Yeah, I think the probability is relatively high. I can't give it a number, but the person who emailed Matthew, right?
Yeah.
If he has a very light skin color, blonde red hair, blue eyes, I think the probability is very close to 100% that something would happen, just based on the numbers I mentioned earlier, that you need 30, 40,000 hours in the sun to really develop squamous or basal cell skin cancer.
How many hours is that? Let's talk about how many years are we talking.
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah,
we need a calculator.
Okay, somebody figure it out for us. 30,000 hours in the sun.
Yeah.
All right. Somebody figure out how long that is. You mentioned people with darker pigments. So what are the rates for African Americans, for Hispanics, for Asian Americans? Are they much lower?
They are. And so there's national data stating that in U.S. Non-Hispanic Caucasian males, the risk is about 1 in 24, 1 in 27. But as you get typically increasing levels of skin pigment, so if you look at people of Hispanic background or Asian American background, that drops down, and African Americans, it drops down to about 10% of that. Mm. So it's a significant decrease that occurs. Mm.
So maybe if all of this has to do with the sun becoming more intense, as an adaptation, we'll all turn darker some years down the road. Do you think? I mean,
could
seriously.
Could be, but you probably have to give it hundreds of years.
Yeah.
All these things happen very, very slowly.
Right.
But that's probably why, if you think about human evolution, why people who live closer to the equator have historically had darker skin pigment as a way to protect them from the more intense sun.
Right.
And it's typically the people who live at the other extremes of the poles who have the lighter skin because they've had less need over the centuries before and thousands of years before to have that skin pigmentation to protect you.
Yeah, interesting. Our number is 800-486-8655, and let us go next to Ken in Milwaukee. Hi, Ken.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have had skin cancer for many years. And
what kind have you had, Ken?
Pardon me?
What kind have you had?
It was the just the simple precancerous stuff, and then I had one or two basal cells.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
They removed. But my last visit was in December to my dermatologist, which I do every year. And he had a few precancerous things, and he removed them with liquid nitrogen. And then he checked the rest of my back and my body, well, my upper body.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left to go on an extended vacation south, and by the time I got there, there was something on my back that was forming, and they diagnosed it as a sebaceous carcinoma with a squamous metaplasia, which they excised completely.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if I am, is this going to return? Is there a chance that I'll get more of these? And if so, how do I recognize them? How does it manifest itself in an early stage?
So, well, I think we have a lot of assuming to do here in order to give you a good answer. How old are you again?
I'm a senior.
So, and I guess that was your first sebaceous carcinoma, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a little bit of an unusual location to have one of those on the back, but...
I couldn't. I couldn't detect it myself.
Right.
It was on my back. It was in the area where you can't see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is difficult.
Contortionist position, which I don't.
Yeah. The sebaceous carcinoma is a relatively rare type of skin cancer. Also, it is in the group of non-melanoma skin cancers. There are certain conditions associated with it where people get multiple sebaceous carcinomas and also sebaceous gland, oil gland hyperplasias, but that usually happens a little bit earlier. What is your chance of this coming back? Well, it has a little bit to do also with at what stage it was cut out. Was it very early? There was probably some staging work up done, scanning. I think it's very hard for us to give you a definitive answer.
But the most
how does it manifest itself? I mean, how can I detect if it's there, and how do I go to a dermatologist early enough to prevent it from developing?
Right. So the best answer I can give you there: any change, any new spot, any changing spot, if that persists for longer than a couple of weeks or so, then you should just go to the dermatologist and have him or her check that out.
Mm. Thank you very much for your call. We should talk about different treatment form. I was a lifeguard for years, so and had way too much sun. So I've had 1, 2, 3. I was trying to remember yesterday if it's been 3 or 4 basal cell, and some of them have been huge. So don't get it. It's not fun. But there were different treatments for each one of those, and these go back 20 years, I think, was the first one. So what is common treatment now? Do you use that nitrogen? What is it called? Nitrogen?
Yeah, the liquid nitrogen?
Liquid nitrogen, or what?
The basis for all the kinds of treatment we have right now is destroying the cancerous cells completely. And there are different ways to do it. I think still the gold standard would be cutting it out. It out completely with a so-called safety margin of, we measure that in millimeters, which is maybe an eighth of an inch or so. So surgery is really the gold standard. And then there are different ways to do it. There are more difficult but also more elegant ways to do it if it should be on the face compared to the back. And then there are other options, alternatives to surgery. Liquid nitrogen is one option, and if done the right way, it has also a very high clearance rate. And there are still other ways. We have heard from a caller before about that, the so-called chemotherapy cream, which also is a way to locally destroy that cancer.
Mm-hmm. Is that a new kind of treatment?
No, really? It's been around for many years now, and this is very, very effective. We use it for early skin cancers, early squamous cell or basal cell cancers, or for very extensive precancers too.
Yeah. And for melanoma, obviously the earlier the better, as you indicated early on. Do most people catch those kinds of cancers early?
So about 85% of melanomas are caught when they are just localized to the skin. And then it's only about another 15% or so that are caught, are diagnosed when they're regional disease, which means they've spread to the local lymph nodes that drain the area of the skin. And it's a very small minority of patients, typically about 5% or less, that are diagnosed with it spread to other distant organs. So yes, the majority of melanomas are caught at a early stage in the skin.
Yeah, and what is the treatment? If you catch it at, let's say, not really young, but not too far advanced, what is the treatment?
So the early treatment is removal. And so typically what happens when a patient has a mole that's changing or that somebody is concerned about is it'll be removed with either with a biopsy within the dermatologist's office. And then if that biopsy comes back showing that it is indeed an invasive melanoma, or then they will typically be sent to an oncologic surgeon who then removes the area where the biopsy was along with a measured area of normal appearing skin around it. And how much normal appearing skin they remove around it is dependent on how deep or how invasive the original melanoma was. So that's the mainstay of treatment. Another thing to consider is whether or not we need to do anything about the draining lymph nodes from that area. So for thin melanomas, typically 0.75 millimeters or less, or 1 millimeter or less with good prognostic features, if there's no palpable lymph nodes in the area, then nothing further needs to be done with that lymph node area. If there's palpable lymph nodes or we're concerned, then we would be doing imaging and biopsies to prove if there is any melanoma in the local lymph nodes. If your physical exam is normal and the melanoma is greater than a millimeter in size or is between 0.75 and 1 and it has ulceration or the cells are rapidly dividing, then we would typically, then the oncologic surgeons would typically do a sentinel lymph node biopsy similar to they do for breast cancer. And then if that sentinel lymph node shows that the melanoma has spread to the lymph nodes, then the standard of care at this point would be to do a complete lymph node dissection to remove those lymph nodes.
Okay. Let's go next to Paulette in Grays Lake. Hi, Paulette.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I went to have a whole body checkup done at a dermatologist about a year ago. I'm in the age group where in my 60s, and friends of mine were having problems with the basal cell carcinoma, so I went in to get a checkup. I've had reddish blonde hair, freckles, and very pale skin, and just burned mostly my entire life. She didn't find any problems with my skin, but in the last, I would say 5 years maybe, I've had this streak of red from ear to ear on my neck, and it looks like a sunburn. And all she said was she said that's sun damage. And I was not real satisfied with that answer, but I unfortunately didn't take the time to ask her to explain it. So what does that mean? It's not a rosacea. I asked another doctor, but it looks just like I've got sunburn on my neck from ear to ear, and it's just there all the time.
Yeah, that is a very, very common form of sun damage we see. And it has a medical name. It's called poikiloderma. What that really means is that there is multiple things going on after years and years of sun exposure. Some of the blood vessels get a little bit larger. That's causing the redness. There may even be some areas which have a little bit more pigment, some areas with a little less pigment. And those changes tend to be permanent unless you really do something about them, and especially cosmetic dermatology has developed multiple ways to try to correct and repair these signs of photo damage, photo aging, and lasers would be one option. But other than that, you're basically left with preventing it from getting worse by really good sunscreen and wide-brimmed hats. There's not very much you can do about it.
It doesn't lead to anything else, does it? Just that redness?
Just the redness, no. But based on the redness, it is an area which is heavily sun damaged and down the line, maybe an area where skin cancers arise in.
Okay.
Thanks, Paulette.
Very good.
Yeah, thanks for your call. We're talking about skin cancer this hour of the program, how prevalent it is, the types there are, and what you can do to prevent it, and welcoming your phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. Dr. Stefan Schicka is with us, a dermatologist at Fraydert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Amy Harker-Murray is also with us. She is a hematologist-oncologist at Fraydert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. More phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655 is our number. Let's go to Guy in Eau Claire next. Hi, Guy. Are you there, Guy? I think your cell phone cut out on us. Amy in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling today because my 92-year-old mother-in-law was diagnosed with Merkel cell skin cancer a little over a year ago. They radiated the first tumor, and it went away. Shortly thereafter, a second tumor popped up. At that point, they did a second PET scan. I forgot to say that the first PET scan was clean. But the second PET scan showed that it was systemic. It was in her long bones and her organs, pretty much throughout the body. So they, at that point, told her to go home and arrange hospice, and essentially that she was terminal. So when you're told that you're terminal, you're sort of willing to try anything. So we started to look at homeopathic, and we came across frankincense and boswellia extract, and we have been using those for the last four months about, topical with the frankincense essential oil, orally with the boswellia extract. And actually, we injected the visible tumor with the frankincense oil, and after about 3 weeks, the tumor started to shrink. And at this point, 4 months later, there's nothing, no tumors are showing at all. She's in better condition than she's been in a couple of years. And I was wondering if you have any thoughts or information on the frankincense and homeopathic types of treatment.
Well, Amy, I have to say that your story is quite amazing. Merkel cell is, again, one of those very rare non-melanoma skin cancers. And when it has metastasized or spread to other organs, the typical therapy that we would offer is chemotherapy. Drugs that can be very toxic with quite a few side effects and have not been shown to be to cure disease, but to maybe to control and shrink disease. So depending on your mother-in-law's overall good health, it might have been difficult for her to tolerate any of our classic chemotherapies. I am not aware of any data on boswellia or frankincense oil, but I don't think we necessarily have all the answers in Western medicine, and sometimes we have surprising changes. So I think you should be very grateful for the response your mother-in-law has had. Mm. I think that's an amazing outcome.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Thank you very much for the call. And may she live a whole lot longer.
Yes.
She's lived already a good long life. She's supposed to be here for a while longer. You wanted to talk a little bit more about the decreased risk of occurrence of, was it melanoma because of the drugs that are available?
So we had been talking about the therapies for melanoma, and we had talked about surgical treatment.
Yeah.
And that's the first step in treatment for patients with melanoma. But for patients who have high-risk disease where it's spread to local lymph nodes and where recurrence risks can be quite high, well over 50% for some patients over the years to come, we're trying to find ways to help decrease that risk. Unlike a lot of other cancers, melanoma does not typically respond well to classic chemotherapy like we use for, say, breast
really?
Or lung cancer.
Mm.
So the treatments that we use in patients to help decrease the risk of recurrence work on the immune system to try and rev the immune system up and get it to do a better job of killing any melanoma cells that might be left behind, that have snuck out of the local area, gotten into the bloodstream or the lymphatics, and are too small to see on any CT scan or PET scan. And so the most commonly used drug is called interferon alpha-2b, and then there's a new form of it as well that's pegylated or slow release. And so both of these drugs have been shown to help delay or decrease risk of recurrence, but have not been necessarily shown to improve overall survival. But there are other therapies that are out there, and we're finding new therapies. So with those four drugs that have been discovered over the past 4 years in stage four metastatic melanoma, we are studying those in earlier stage disease in order to help improve curability for for melanoma that spread to lymph nodes. And we actually have a clinical trial at Froedtert in the Medical College of Wisconsin looking at using this interferon alpha-2b along with one of the new drugs in the stage 4 setting to see if combining two different types of immunotherapy can improve disease-free survival and overall survival. Mm. So there is hope on the horizon.
Yeah, great. And what about, you know, I mentioned earlier that I've had several bouts of basal cell. I just sort of, at this point in my life, I'm not a young person anymore, figure I'm just going to keep having this for the rest of my life. All that sun, all that lifeguarding, you know, all of the times in sailing and getting brown, and that it's all caught up with me, and that's, I'm just, I hope that's all I have. But I keep thinking, I just keep getting more, oh, it's another round. It's become almost routine at this point. Is that what happens to normal people, to people like me, that you just sort of keep getting more and more the older you get?
It depends. I mean, it clearly shows up after years and years of sun exposure, right? So that explains the age with which you basically this occurred. The question is just how much sun damage is sort of hidden in the skin, which may cause the basal cells later down the line. But what we see sometimes in patients, and that's what we are aiming for always, is to get sort of the precancerous spots and all the cancerous spots under control, remove all the skin cancer. We are really good in advising sun protective behavior and strategies. And what we see in some patients is that we really get on top of the problem. And after we took off several squamous cell and basal cells, froze and treated several precancers, we can actually get to the point, provided the patient is doing good sun protection, that the patient is clear for all the years to come.
Yeah. What do, I mean, this is radio, so people can't see both of you, but obviously you're in the business where your skin has to be looking really good. But both of you have really good-looking skin, which I've been noticing as we've been talking. Do you do certain things? And you obviously both must, and you have to because of the nature of your business in a way. But what do you do to keep yourself from having any of those weird things on your body or on your face?
What do I do? When I go out for longer periods of time on the water, around the water or so, sunscreen, of course,
right.
Or covering up, but on a daily basis, not very much,
not
honestly.
No.
I had multiple sunburns as a child.
Did you really?
Blistering sunburns.
Oh.
And so I have higher risk skin. So I've become very good about putting SPF on. I have three young children, and I'm pleased to say that even my seven-year-old hasn't had a sunburn yet, as best as we can do. So I think the other nice thing is there are also cosmetics that you can buy that has SPF in them as well. So that's a good way just to put that on your face and your neck, which for women is quite often the most frequently sun-exposed area.
And that is absolutely the way it is recommended to find, if you spend a lot of time outdoors, really find a daily moisturizer with SPF 30,
right.
SPF 50,
right.
Which, well, you could argue protects you only for a few hours after you put it on in the morning, but that may be better than nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how everybody who's been affected by skin cancer did, you know, the baby oil and all of that. We now are so careful with our children. You never got a sunburn and you're 22 years old, just once, a little tiny bit, you know. We've totally changed the way we look at the sun. So that's a good thing.
Right.
Yeah. Let's go to, we got to do it in a minute. Maggie in Madison, hi.
Hi. I am calling because I had what I learned to be a pretty rare form of skin or soft tissue cancer called dermatofibroma sarcoma protuberans.
Mm-hmm.
Does it ring a bell?
Yeah, it does. Well, you can just call it DFSP. That's easier.
Thank you. Okay. And what's your question?
It was successfully excised, but they did not do that special Mohs surgery with the wide borders. And basically my question is, they're having me this, I think it was 2009, and they wanted me to go to an oncologist every 3 months for follow-up. But I felt like when I was going, there wasn't much happening. He would just kind of press on the area to see if he felt anything, and feel my lymph nodes. And I was just kind of wondering if there's a better follow-up, like a scan.
We only have about 30 seconds left.
Okay. Well, really, local recurrence is the number one thing with this DFSP, and that's what should be detected early. That's why looking and feeling that area where it was initially excised is really the number one thing. That's correct.
Ooh, 20 seconds. Nice job. Thank you both.
Thank you
very much. You were very, very informative. Do you have a website or something? If people want more information about this whole area, they should go to...
Yeah, we do have the Frederick Clinical Cancer Center has a website from the Skin Cancer Center with information about the different types of skin cancer, about clinical trials we offer, and about research we do.
Great. Thank you very much for being with us. Our thanks to Dr. Amy Harker-Murray. She's a hematologist and oncologist. Dr. Stefan Schicka, who is a dermatologist. They are both at Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour and to Marika Saval for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee. Thanks for listening, everybody. Great conversations ahead.